Hey there, welcome to another episode of Dead Frog Podcast. I'm host Joe Felix. This is a podcast dedicated to the ins, outs, and technical aspects of stand-up comedy. You know, it's something that I think is an art. And today we're going to be talking about Nate Bargatze. Nate is one of these comics that I feel is loved by many comics. I think most would call him a comics comic. You know, I think one of the biggest things that he did was the stand-ups, that six-part series on Netflix in 2017. I think that's where he got his big start. And then shortly after that, like 2 years later, he released the Tennessee Kid, which is dope. And like, it's interesting because it was filmed in Georgia, right? And with me today to talk about Nate Bargatze is Jack Daniel Melanson, which I hope I pronounced that well. Jack,
No, you did. You nailed it.
Oh, perfect. I always try to say anglicized names, I'll say like, did I get that right?
Right. Yeah. Well, it's so stupid too, because my whole life I got Melanson, and you know, if you phonetically take a look at my name, it's clearly Melanson.
Yeah.
You know, like. And I guess I never understood that, but, you know, shit happens.
I'm a better reader than most, I'll tell you that.
I like that.
And Jack, I'm about to speak about you again. You've been featured in the New York Times and on ABC. And you've performed in Maine, New York City, Los Angeles, but absolutely nowhere in between. Why did you have to clarify that?
Well, because, you know, I've performed in a few states. I'm from Maine and I went to school in New York. So I've done some comedy in those spots. And most of the comedy I've done is in Los Angeles now that I've lived here for 2 years. But I just, you know, I don't know. I feel like the rest of the country just has never been like sexy for me. And I've just never gone out of my way. Like I don't even care about Florida. Most people don't care about Florida, but like love going there. And I don't know. I'm one of those people that once I go somewhere, I'm all about that place. Like ever since I've been in Los Angeles, I've been to Vegas twice and literally nowhere else. Like I haven't gone north up to San Francisco, south down to San Diego. I'm just all about LA.
Oh, so. Become a ride or die. Nice.
Exactly.
That's good. Yeah, Vegas. It's interesting how that's a destination. I'm surprised that Las Vegas is a destination for LA people, when SF is like, I mean, twice the distance, but just so much better.
Yeah, I think it's kind of what you're about. Like, I want to go to San Francisco so bad, and I really think I would have. I'm a pretty big baseball fan, and I really think I would have gone up this year for a game.
Yeah.
And also down to San Diego for a game and probably even Arizona for a game. Like I think baseball would have had me travel a little bit more just because I love going to different ballparks. But yeah, there's just something about Vegas. I think you grow up and, you know, it's so bright and a lot, it looks like a lot of fun. And I had to go, and it's been a lifelong dream of my dad's to go to Vegas too. And when he was out here visiting me, we made a point to make the drive. So it was pretty special.
Oh, super cool, man. Okay, then let me ask you this. Having been to Vegas, would you want to do comedy there?
I really, really would, yeah. As
like a residency or as maybe the local comedy club?
You know, I'm not sure. I would definitely do a residency, I think. It's funny, like I've gone to Vegas twice. They were very they were like half a year apart, and the whole entire city is just surrounded with Andrew Dice Clay billboards.
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He is the Vegas comedian these days. Maybe always, but yeah, I mean, I love doing comedy in like tourist spots just because I feel like you get such an interesting crowd, like a super diverse crowd with all these, different backgrounds, and I think that'd be a great place to make people laugh.
Yeah, I see that, and I think your humor does lend itself to a broad audience, which is really good.
I hope so. Yeah,
you know, when I was going, like when I we would do family trips when I was younger, the big comics were George Wallace.
Okay. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, Rita Rudner.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm gonna open this door real quick. Hold on. Sorry, listeners. Okay. But yeah, okay. I remember going up there and wanting, a few years ago, actually, and then looking for comedy clubs to perform in.
We're still talking about Vegas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And you can't, I don't know if there's such a thing as an open mic over there.
That's interesting. I know that there's websites that sort of navigate open mics, but I didn't look either. I was there so briefly the first time and actually the second time during COVID, which is sort of regrettable, but I had another friend in town that wanted to go, but it sucked. You don't want to go to Vegas during COVID, but I don't know what the open mic scene is like there. I would definitely be interested in ripping some open mics though. Maybe that's what we should do next.
Oh, that'd be tight. Yeah. It's we call it a tour, but it's just us going to a Las Vegas open mic.
Yeah. See, I always want to do that too. Just like fly home to Maine and say it's for tour. And just like, I know a local bowling alley the town over from Maine does open mics and just say I'm touring all around the world.
Sick. National tour. Yeah,
exactly.
With a bunch of canceled dates. Before we ask you more about your comedy journey, I do want to mention that you're going to have a backyard show in West Hollywood on the 21st, right?
Yes, sir.
And people who want to attend should reach out to you via.
Yeah. So people that want to attend the show on the 21st can definitely reach out to me on Instagram. That handle is at Jack Melanson 24. Yeah, reach out, let me know that you're interested in attending. And basically, we want to keep people socially distant. But due to the size of the backyard, we're, you know, probably going to do it restaurant style and have the groups that come together kind of sit together. That way we can maybe get some more people in the backyard able to laugh. But I heard, Joe, that you're going to be there.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I am going to be there. And I heard that I'm doing an hour-long set. No, I'm
You know, I wish I could have you do an hour. I love that you're down to do, what did we decide? You said you could do 12 minutes?
Yeah, I'm going to do some 12 minutes.
I love that you're down to do 12 minutes. I think that a few of my, fellow friends, comedians that are attending to performing, and me too, like I'm afraid of that, especially right now. It's been so long. And so I think I'm going to do like an 8 minute sort of welcome back set.
Yeah.
So good for you for flexing 12. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you know, thanks for having me on. There is actually one joke in particular that I'm really excited to tell. It's all kind of like, adding on to like the skeleton of the set that I already have. You know, I'm always building on that one piece of clay,
right?
So I'm very excited to add a new another piece of furniture, I guess.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm definitely excited to hear it. And honestly excited to hear everyone. I think that COVID has helped a lot of comedians, obviously hurt our ability to flex those muscles, but you know, I do think there's something about sort of alone time and quarantining that can make writing a lot better. So, you know, I think once this thing once we shut the door on COVID, whenever that is, I think that the comedy scene is going to be even funnier.
Not to take away from learning more about you, but I do have to ask, can you share who's on the bill?
For the show?
Yeah, just to tantalize our viewer listeners a little bit more.
Yeah, I can. I don't have the list in front of me, and I'm not like incredibly super familiar with everyone. I'm co-producing the show with my buddy Malcolm Kellner, who is so funny. He calls himself the Walmart Nick Kroll. They sort of look alike. but he's really funny, and he pumps out like social media content like no one I've ever seen. He's this dude from Minnesota, and he just really, really is funny. So we connected early on out here through some mutual friends, and have done some open mics together. So I'm really excited that, you know, he sort of helped me champion this idea of a backyard show. And through him, we got some great connections. He has a buddy, Eli, I'm forgetting his last name and I don't have it in front of me, but he just recently performed at the Laugh Factory. They had this like virtual roast and had a very funny set about Tiffany Haddish, who was there virtually kind of heckling him. and he kind of threw it back at her. So he's super funny.
Very cool. Oh, I'm excited. I'm excited to be part of this.
Yeah, and a bunch of other people, not to discredit anyone else. But yeah, it's going to be a good group.
Hell yeah. Okay. So, hey, can you tell us how long you've been doing stand-up?
So officially, I mean, I've been doing stand-up regularly since I moved out to LA. So just about 2 years, but I always wrote and I've felt like I was always writing stand-up comedy, but never quite performing it, which is maybe something a lot of people do. But I first found comedy in high school and did forms of stand-up through like a variety show that we always did. And that really is what birthed my love for making people laugh was that show. I can very confidently point to that one very particular show.
Oh yeah. What year were you in high school?
So I was a freshman in high school and I had grown up going to this show at my high school because my brother was always in it. He's much more naturally talented than I am. So he was always singing and he's very like good on stage. And he actually won that talent show twice in high school. And I went on to come in second 3 times in a row and then win senior year. So it's still a joke that he's better at that show than me. But yeah, I always kind of took a comedy sort of satirical, like late night style, approach to that show.
Oh, very cool. And then, okay. So then what was the thing that, so you took, okay, you kept writing and, when you just, okay, was it that you moved out here with the intention to like pursue comedy full force?
Yeah, it definitely was. And I was in New York. I lived in the Bronx for college and I had no intention of ever leaving New York City. I was probably going to dive into the New York comedy scene. But I came out here for this trip that I went on for school and fell in love with it and had a good buddy out here from home who needed a roommate. And I took every opportunity to do that and could never see myself living in the concrete jungle that is New York ever again. It's just too nice out here. But yeah, no, it really was always for comedy and screenwriting.
Hell yeah. Okay. And then can you tell us a little bit more about your screenwriting?
Yeah, you know, I wish there was more to tell, but I'm just exploring, really. I'm working with some great people now, thankfully, that are really giving me the right connections where I can, you know, showcase some of my work. Working on some shorts, trying to run the festival circuit. Working on some feature stuff kind of by myself. And we'll see. I mean, that's such a journey, but I'm confident that, you know, I don't know. I'm confident that eventually it'll pay off. And I don't mean to sound like too arrogant or something, but
No. You're doing the work. That's good. That's perfect.
Yeah, man, it's been a journey, and I really do love writing. At the end of the day, though, I love writing stand-up comedy more than anything. When I was, I guess the first bit of writing I did, not to talk too much, but I was always like sending in jokes to Seth Meyers and Jimmy Fallon. They always have those forums that you can send in jokes for, and I did get one on Seth Meyers in college, but I just fell in love through the Tonight Show and those things.
Oh, nice. Do you remember what that joke was?
I don't. I should, you know, like that's all on me. It was like 5 years ago. I know it was about Rudy Giuliani, which just makes sense. And he actually went to my college, and it was weird because there was, in the time that I was there, Rudy Giuliani was like a hero and then went to like a zero real fast.
Yeah.
You know, like his name just like off the building, just crazy. So I technically co-wrote it with a friend of mine. Her name's Rose Brennan, and you know, it was good. It was cool. But I sent in so many that my batting average isn't super high.
But I do like that. I always, you know, I think it's interesting when people have the inclination to actually do something like that, where it's like, hey, you know, I'm gonna write it. And I, for me, I feel like I have to write something. It has to be made or done or said.
Yeah.
So, you know, I commend you on taking that risk and doing it.
Well, I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, and I wasn't asking about your first like bit or joke. So that's, yeah. So we're on track.
Nice. I love the smooth transitions.
So we're here. We're with Jack Daniel Melanson, and you're about to listen to a word from our sponsors and a stand-up clip from Nate Bergazzi. We'll be right back.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. It was very nice. All right. So my last name is Bargatze. I know nothing about the history of my family. I've never, like, really looked into it. So I asked a great uncle, told me a pretty wild story. We had a guy in our family that got murdered, actually, by a sickle, like the thing the Grim Reaper carries. And this was like the 1800s, too, just so you don't have to feel. It's not a recent story. We're over it as a family. So the guy, it was his own fault, too. The guy's nickname, they called him Two Thumbs Bargatze. And the reason they called him that was because he had two thumbs on one hand, but still had the other thumb. So not even a good nickname. I'm Two Thumbs Bargatze. Everybody but him is Two Thumbs Bargatze. He's the only not Two Thumbs we've ever had in the history of our family. So, like I said, he was a troublemaker. Two Thumbs, he was hooking up with this guy's wife. So he's at her house. He leaves. The neighbor sees him. He gives him two thumbs, one hand up, you know. And the neighbor's like, all right. The husband gets home. The neighbor was like, hey, your wife's cheating on you with this dude. And he was like, who's the guy? And he was like, I don't know his name, but he had two thumbs on one hand, if that helps. And, you know, the guy was like, that helps a lot. I didn't know you were going to be that specific. So I know exactly who it is. So Two Thumbs was at home. This is all what I was told. He was at home. He was gardening. He was extra good at gardening. And he's sitting there. He's gardening. And the sickle's there. And then he kills him. He kills him with it. And that's it. That's basically it. But here's the lesson. All right, guys? The lesson is, if you're doing something shady, that's not the time to stand out. You know? Like, you don't want to be different then. Put your dumb hand in your pocket. If I had three legs and was going to rob a bank, I'm going to be the getaway driver. I'm not going to gallop in the bank with all three legs. Just blend in. That's the real message. Just don't stand out. Just blend in. Sometimes you can't help it, though. I've had it where I had it recently. I was getting coffee, and I like iced coffee with milk. Nothing crazy. And I went to order it. You know when you order something and the guy looks at you weird and you're like, I'm pretty sure he doesn't know what I just said. But you're both touching the credit card, so you're just too far into it. And you're like, all right, let's see what he thinks he heard. And I go to the end of the counter to get my drink, and he gives me milk with ice in it. I had to ask him. I was like, what is that? He's like, it's milk with ice in it. And I was like, do I look like a psycho to you, dude? I've never drank milk publicly in the history of my life. I've never once in my life been in public and thought, you know what I could go for right now? I'd like a cup of milk. I like to drink it out of a clear cup so other adults know exactly what I'm drinking. And I was also wondering if you could put a straw in it. Something I haven't done in maybe 35 years, and I thought we should do that again right now. And I was wondering if you could put milk in it and ice. And then, you know, that's something that I don't know if you're allowed to do, but I would like to try that now in front of all these people that I've never met before. The bad part about this is it's happened twice. All right? And the first time, you know, that's a lot. That's a lot for it to happen. And the second time, you start looking at yourself. You start thinking like, I don't know if I know how to order. I'm not ordering correctly, you know? I thought it was gonna happen a third time. There was a third time, and she put the drink down. I was like, this is unbelievable. I was like, they're against me. But she just put too much milk into it. And she told me that. It was a very honest moment. She like set it down, we're both looking at it. And she just was like, it feels like a lot of milk, doesn't it? And I was like, just looked at it. And I was, you know, it's like, not as much as usual, but it does feel like a lot. All right, thank you guys so much. On and on and on. I said,
and it's on and on and on. I love it.
Man, that
so fucking
man.
Funny, dude, honestly.
Jack, why?
You know, it's funny because I feel like even just my response just now, like, I think like I'm a relatively monotone person myself, and throughout my life I've like gotten in trouble for, you know, people not being able to gauge my sarcasm, and just because the delivery is almost the same as me being serious. So, you know, I find that Nate Bargatze is the same in ways. Obviously he's on another level, but he reminds me a lot of myself, or I, you know, and I just think he's real, man. He's real and he's simple, but he's also smart, but he kind of speaks to the average person, and he's great, man.
Yeah. You're completely right. I've mentioned this to you before, but I think he's a sort of monotone and like sardonic that other people would like to, they like, even in casual conversation, when someone decides to be sarcastic, they want it to right. have an effect. And Nate is a person who has like really perfected what that can look
100%.
Like.
And I genuinely, I don't know if I sort of said this before, but I genuinely believe that he's just being him, you know? Like I think everyone wants to achieve that sort of thing, but I don't think you can achieve it unless it's real. And he's real. I mean, I believe him personally.
Yeah, I think that's what stands between people who write and then people
like imitate almost.
Yeah, people who are imitating comics. The difference between people who imitate and people who are comics, to an extent, and I don't like condone this, but you have to be that guy. Like that same mode, that same those reasoning faculties that you use to observe the world, right? Those have to just be churning all the time. I'm sure you come across this where it's like, oh, I like, you might be perceiving like a situation in a way that an event, in a way that like a normal person should perceive it, but there's always like that lens that's operating in the background, like
right.
Comic
oh,
lens.
Always for sure. Especially the more you write, you always think that, oh, maybe this is something, or, and that's really the first tip I ever got about comedy was from my brother, and it was when I was going to do that first show in high school. And he said, you know, so simply, comedy is relevance. Like relevance is humor. And like, it's so simple, but so true. And if you're going through these little aspects of life that everybody goes through and you can find this funny lens and funny way to kind of share that shared reality with others, it's hilarious. And I think that's what Nate Bargatze does most of the time. And, you know, the second part of his set here where, you know, he's talking about the coffee with milk and the, how he's just getting a glass of milk. Like, I've actually, like, that's happened to me. I don't know if that's why I think it's so funny, but I order a coffee with milk and.
Oh, you got in milk with ice. Or
yeah. So milk. Like, I think, or, you know, or like, I don't mean to mislead. Like I've heard them like say that sort of thing back to me. And I'm like, no, like, you know, why would I ever want that? You know, I've never, and like he said, I've never just drank a glass of milk in my life. Like, I'm not a milk person. I'll use it to, you know, make coffee taste a little better, but I'm not just drinking milk. And when he says those sorts of things in the bit where, you know, he's like, I thought now would be a good time to just drink milk in front of other adults, like, you know, and layering on, like, with a straw, like, right now would be a good time. It's just hilarious. I don't know.
Cool. Well, and we're gonna circle this particular joke again in just like a moment.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean.
But to before, that's fine. But before that, you know what I've noticed during quarantine? When I do go get a coffee, they're actually more accurate, with even though we have masks on. That might just be anecdotal. I don't think that's
probably, well, it could be because they're trying harder to listen because there's no mouth reading, potentially.
You know, I'm also using my stage voice because I'm like, I have to speak through the mask.
Yeah, project. But that mask thing is also a problem because you lose, like, I don't think I ever realized how much my mouth talks for me sometimes. Like, the ways that, like, you smile at someone or like whatever. That like body language is important in communication, and you know, now you only get that from people's eyes, and it's interesting to kind of learn that eyes can do the same thing, right? Like, you know, when someone's smiling just by how their eyes look.
I think it's called
sneezing. Yeah, yeah. No, I've heard the term. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, and here's the thing, right? And you want to make sure that people see you do the smize. And I have very almond eyes. So when I smize and I try to hold it for longer, I sometimes fear that people think they're
sleeping. Yeah, I see that. And I'm like a super sleepy person. I kind of like struggle with some like light form of narcolepsy, like not to comment on anyone that really, really struggles with narcolepsy, but I can like pass out instantly. And yeah, I totally get that, man. But the difference is I probably am falling asleep.
Yeah. I do like going on tangents because we're both very, I think we are both deadpan, right? And so it's like we've gone on this tangent, right? which I invited, right? It's just two deadpan guys talking about nothing. But we're about to talk about a third deadpan guy. So I really like how he decided to do this in the set. You know, obviously the coffee bit is a better joke.
Yeah, the closer.
But one thing that you hear about stand up is like you need to have the audience on your side from the beginning, and I feel like he chose this story to tell specifically for that, because one, it gives a good amount of space for him to introduce his way of speaking and telling jokes and like commenting on certain details by creating like a terrain. A story is a really good terrain in which you can just start to like sprinkle jokes into like every beat. So instead of like, because I feel like a lot of comics who are deadpan, like Mitch Hedberg, Stephen Wright, you're incredibly more dependent on like having something like something explicitly tell the audience, I'm here to have fun with you, because we can kind of come off as removed or, you know, like not wanting to be there.
Because that's a great point.
But I think you're very charming.
I hope so.
Crowds, right? So I think I think you get to play that. But I've seen you do like jokes that are like, can you let's you know, I'm new to you, so let me say something that gives you confidence that I should be talking to you. And I think Nate does that with the story by giving up like a very saucy account in his family's history. I do like that he talks about like his family member. Obviously this is very planned out. This is like this way of telling a story where you're like, oh, this person died.
We're over it now. Like that was like, and I think that's another skill you need as like a deadpan comic, where you touched on it, but like, you know, Nate Bargatze almost like never has a real punchline. It's honestly just bits and pieces of the story that get funnier, and his tone of voice doesn't change. Like none of that. He just trains the audience to trust him, I guess. And like you said, be on his side and understand that these things are funny, sort of thing. Like he's really good at that.
Yeah, I think you're completely right. He doesn't have a real punchline.
Never.
Which is a talent.
Yeah.
It's a talent. And then he introduces, you know, oh, this is like a big thing, not to liken him to another comedian, but the idea of introducing characters with nicknames is a big Theo Von thing, where he's like, look at this idiosyncratic person, right? So it's two thumbs Bargatze. And right away, that's funny, right? And then he goes on to ridicule, like, the point out why that's absurd.
Yeah, so true. He's like, he's the only one that isn't two thumbs.
He talks about how he was an adulterer, right? So then in your mind now, you're even more alleviated, because you're like, oh, because I guess he was kind of a bad guy and he deserved being. Yeah, we're not talking about some unfortunate death. We're talking about something that
right.
come up and... So that's good. That's a good way to like temper emotions within the audience. And like,
just like to make a violent story funny is also like a skill too, you know. And I think it obviously helps that it's so far removed. You know, he mentions like, don't feel bad for not hearing about it, sort of thing. That definitely helps. But yeah, I forget where I was going with that. Sorry.
Oh, well, that tension, like, I think, you know, if you listen to late night comedy, those opening monologues, that's really all it is, which is like heightening the situation by using real world events and then subverting that. Like, you're tense and then there's catharsis. You know, it can be even like the worst things. You know, there was a drone strike, like, you know, Obama, did a drone strike on like a village of children.
Yeah.
In, I don't know, Yemen or whatever. But it was good for Timmy because it was he didn't study for his final. know, like,
right. Oh God. Yeah, no. And you know, but it has to be intelligent. It has to be intelligent for that to work, you know, like, or you just have to get away with it. It's like Jesselneck humor, right? Where like, I don't know how he gets away with the stuff that he says, but he does. And, you know, when you start trying to imitate that, or, you know, comedians like Bargatze, you just get in trouble because you can't do it the way that they do it because it's not you.
Yeah. It's like, honestly, and you'll probably come across this you probably have come across this where people are like, they want to emulate other comics, but then you have to kind of tell them, like, you're not that clever.
Right. Cause if you were, you wouldn't be emulating anyone.
Yeah. You would find your way of doing it. Like, I'm sure Bargatze, has so many people who are influencing his comedy, but he found a way to deliver what he needs to say. Like, especially that's kind of humor when you subvert expectations. So, like, you know, I call, like, people like Kevin Hart and, like, Richard Pryor, like, Showtime comedians. They heighten energy, right? And then they're really about – they're kind of folksy, too, where the way that, like, their punchline depends on, like, this group think, where someone like Bergazzi will touch on subjects that feel more intimate, like, reflections on things that happen to you as an individual. And – so I don't know how you describe that kind of humor, but
I think it's like you said, almost like a comedian. He's like a comedian's comedian. Like I don't think that Kevin Hart is a comedian's comedian. I think he's an audience's comedian, you know? And that's nothing wrong with him. Mm-hmm. I think anybody in our field would want to sell out crowds like Kevin Hart can sell out crowds. And he also does that by being so animated and so all over the stage. And, you know, his movement is funny. That's not Bergazzi. Bergazzi is funny at telling you a situation. His tone is funny, but he could do it laying down, you know?
Yeah. And okay, so then just to round out this joke, you know, he talks about how his great uncle or whatever gave a thumbs up as he was being caught and displayed that his two thumbs, and it's a very funny setup. Like he says, like, this guy has two thumbs like so many times throughout.
Yeah, that's, you know, I guess how repeating yourself can just be funny. Like by saying this absurd thing over and over again, almost you get to a point where it might get old, and then you say it again and it's hilarious again.
Yeah. That's, oh yeah. Do you know about that?
Like, I forget what it's called. There's a term for that, but you have to do it right or else you totally fucked up.
Yeah. And that's like, you know, really to listeners, that's kind of a, I wouldn't say inside baseball sort of thing. But I think that really is advanced humor. It's like it's doing a bit, essentially. Like if you're doing it with your friends, there's a point in which it plateaus, but then you just keep going. And because you keep going after it's plateaued, it becomes absurd and like,
yeah, so true. Honestly.
So, you know, this whole thing is dependent on the fact that this guy has two thumbs on one hand.
Two thumbs, Bergazzi.
If you're doing something shady, that's not the time to stand out.
So
he harps on it again.
Yeah, the moral of the story is that if you're doing something shady, it's not the time to stand out. And how, you know, if he was robbing a bank and had three legs, he's not going to gallop. And, you know, even like picturing, you get away with these things as a comedian if the imagery that you're creating is funny. So like, he's setting up the stage of him having three legs and galloping around a bank as he's robbing it. Like that is a funny visual to picture Nate Bargatze doing that, you know, like, so he'd just be the getaway driver. Like,
yeah. So he used to be the getaway driver. Yeah. And so that's what he does. He's like, okay, he maps on and recontextualizes. So it's like, okay, you shouldn't do that because of this feature. And then likewise, if you're in another situation with similar feature, you know, that's a very easy one-to-one. Like after you do comedy, so this is a tag, right? So after you tell your punchline, there are so many things you can do as a comedian. You can pause and you can move on, or you can go and do another tag, or some people even repeat the punchline.
Dave Chappelle kind of does that sometimes. But then again, he can do whatever he wants sort of thing. But yeah, he definitely does that. And like Dave Chappelle has gotten to the point where he knows he's so good and just is so confident in his humor as he should be that he laughs at his own punchline and repeats it again. And, you know, does that a few times sometimes, stamps around, like storms around the stage. Yeah, yeah.
That he started doing that a lot.
I think so. Yeah, it seems like a newer part of his comedy, but it works. I think. I mean, everything he does works.
All right. Now we're here at the ordering coffee bit. the closing joke, even though it's just, it's kind of just two jokes.
Well, so an interesting like aspect to this, and I wanted to make sure I brought this up because Fallon is a big reason why he's as successful as he is now. Like, that was the first show he performed on. He's somewhat of a regular stand-up comedian on The Tonight Show. And that has definitely given his career some legs. But obviously, because he's on The Tonight Show, it's a little bit of a, you know, you have to sort of tone it down. It's on NBC, right? I had watched Bargatze for years. And I posted a clip of his on my Instagram story. And a buddy of mine who is like pretty religious, and I don't think he's super into swearing, commented on it saying, you know, this guy is so funny. I love that he does his, you know, his stand up without swearing. And I didn't even notice that he didn't swear. Like, that's amazing to me because, you know, maybe that's my fault for not noticing. I just don't think it matters. Like, he's good enough where, you know, and swearing's a crutch, but like, he's so good without doing it at all.
Yeah, and that's really how you you tour. That's how you tour the Midwest, and that's how you actually get on late night, because you have good material. You have you know, Jim Gaffigan sort of thing. Yeah, you're right. He doesn't curse, so he's more wholesome. Even though he's talking, you know, at some points he talks about like putting down his dog. He talks about yelling at his wife jokingly, right? But because he doesn't swear, he still
that's a really good point to like layer on to this, I think. Yeah, for sure. You get away like he has like this whole thing about dead horses that you mentioned, and it's like, you know, maybe you don't get away with that if you're dropping F-bombs all over the place.
I do love, like, just real quick thing, like when it came to the rating system for like films, sometimes you'll see like really heavy material, but because there's no explicit sort of cursing or imagery, then you get away with it. Like, you know, Happy Feet, that film, that's an allegory to the abolition of religion.
It's been so long since I've seen it, but I can start connecting that with you saying this.
I do recommend you. Yeah, but that's a heavy topic, but because it's not obvious and you don't see any imagery, it's still rated like PG.
Well, kids cartoons and stuff have gotten away with that sort of thing forever. I think that's why like the satirical programs do so well, is because they, you know, like, what's to say honestly that Family Guy or South Park is like all that different from SpongeBob, you know? Like, obviously they're so different, but at the same time, it's really just being more obvious about the commentary. So that's a good point you brought up, I think.
Yeah. But yeah, so then I guess that's why we need people like Nate, because he can talk about these issues. Like, we need people, right, who will work clean, will talk about these issues. This way we can get to a larger audience about certain, you know, day-to-day, what's the word? Like observations, right? Like, things that are kind of odd in the world.
Yeah.
We need someone who can speak.
I also think sometimes that's so true. I also just think sometimes you just need to laugh, and some of his content is heavy, but at the same time, most of it just isn't. And that's okay too. Like, that for me, like, I love satirical stuff. It's what I studied. It's my favorite form of content, but sometimes you just want to laugh because that guy's being funny, and you too one time almost got a coffee without coffee and just milk, you know? Sometimes you just need someone commenting on that.
And thanks for segueing back into the material we should be covering. Yeah, so, I mean, if you want to take it
away. Well, I touched on it before, and I am really glad that we talked about the first bit, too, because it is super funny, and it's a great way to, like you said, introduce himself to the Tonight Show crowd and the NBC audience and that sort of thing. But I just think that, you know, that joke is different, but very similar to the two thumbs Bargatze joke, where there are really no punchlines. Like the last thing he said in that joke was what, that the last coffee he got had less milk than usual. Like, that is such a stupid punchline, but it works so well. And I don't mean stupid, like, you know, it was so clever, but for no reason other than the fact that it came out of Nate Bargatze's mouth, I think.
Yeah, and it's, I think, okay, if we're looking at that the actual last line of the set, where he does say, like, it has less milk than usual, he's definitely good at giving the audience, letting the audience feel clever, because right there, he literally does, like, he gives them omniscience. This bartender, I mean, this Starbucks barista or whatever, the barista doesn't know that he gets milk or that he's gotten it before.
Yeah.
So that's where I did a second guess. So I'm like, wait, who's this joke for? And it's like, yeah, he's giving them omniscience. Imagine saying that to, how would the barista respond to that?
Yeah, so true, man. And, you know, I you're so good at breaking it down and like really, really finding what's working. But at the end of the day, I just think it's hilarious that not only is Bargatze talking about milk, what you and I are doing right now is talking about milk. You know, like,
yeah, you're right. Well, we're talking about the possibility of getting milk, because who knows if this is true? Because, like, as a comic, you can be like, oh, I kind of avoided this. But then you say to yourself, you ask yourself, but what if that did happen? What would that look like?
No, yeah. And I...
So, sorry. But for me...
It is. You're right. It is the possibility of milk. But I also think, and this could be an ignorant statement, but there's something about it, whether it's true or not, is that, like, he's believable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, he's the everyday. He's the everyman in that situation. He puts it in your mind. Well, how would you react in this situation? But so there's the audience he divides the audience in people who have not had that experience and then are on board with him and are now like, he kind of is their placeholder in this situation. And people like yourself who have received milk.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then you get sort of catharsis, because I guess to speak about your experience, right?
Yeah, no, and, man, yeah. And I just think I'm not gonna go and say that Nate Bargatze is like my favorite comedian of all time, because he probably isn't, but he is my favorite like comedian right now. I think it's just because of how I feel like I relate to him, and what he's able to accomplish with all the things we've talked about. But like, I don't know, I guess, have you like, what were your feelings of Nate Bargatze before, you know, you kind of analyzed him for this episode?
Oh, I thought he was just like a flat out good comedian. I know people are really enjoying him. I don't know if you know Matt Bell. Matt, he's like, LA comic. He really likes Nate Bargatze. I'm like, yeah, like, I like his humor.
I get it.
Do it for a long period of time, because yeah, it's just one tone. And I guess this is how I speak.
Yeah,
it's kind of. I don't want to hear that. Yeah. I live it.
That's funny. Yeah,
but yeah, great comic. But I do remember listening to that 2017 Netflix the stand-ups thing. That was really good. I remember that was my first introduction to him, and thinking, oh, damn, I have a way to go. Like, I want to be where he's at. And that's like such an enviable way.
Yeah. No, it is. And I think it's refreshing. It's refreshing. And I think he's so good. And I'm sorry, I started right at the end of the bit, but like, jumping back to what we said before about the first bit too, is he's just so consistent. Like, and maybe that's why you can't take it for an hour, and that's super understandable. But at the same time, he's so consistent through that milk joke, where, you know, there's all these hidden punchlines, but they just really do get funnier, in my opinion. Like that last, I watched that, I knew that joke already. And when I watched that recording yesterday, preparing for this episode, I laughed so hard throughout the whole joke. And then that punchline was really where I really laughed out loud harder than I had before. So I think the consistency and the ability to like build on such a simple topic is not to be repetitive in what I'm saying, but is what makes him special.
Yeah. And you know who I would liken him to? Kyle Kinane.
I feel like I'm unfamiliar, and I'm sorry if that makes me feel like an idiot or look like an idiot.
No, it doesn't. I'm the one who's supposed to know more about stand-up, given that I have the podcast. Yeah. Kyle Kinane is an excellent storyteller. I would say like Kyle Kinane is the dynamic version of Nate. And I would always recommend Kyle Kinane. But yeah, they both have this similar sort of story structure where it's like, here's the event, here are some details for the event, and then, you know, comedy loves detail, as we all know. Here's my comments on those details. Here are my comments on the characters involved. These are like my private thoughts that I've now made public, and you can understand what that's like, right? To have these private thoughts about certain people and events and like how people do things. And
it's so funny because I feel like I broke it down in like such like simple terms that made sense to me. And then you broke it down in such like, I don't know, like an educational way. Like that was incredible. Like, and that, but you nailed it though. That I feel like that's exactly what it is. And I think like you and I, like when you're a writer and you've taken some courses or classes or just done a lot of open mics, whatever it is, I think that good writers do that naturally, but or that sort of thing in some way, shape or form naturally. And once you workshop your stand-up all around, like you realize that it works well when you share your private thoughts, like those sort of like that sort of thing. You know, I just think being able to like sort of decode it is at least as elegantly as you just did. Like that's a real talent. Like that was great.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. I hope it gets me a job.
I'm fine for you.
Thanks. Wait, so I'm just going to go over the joke real quick. So then, and then there's a part that I'm going to ask you to comment on. Okay. So the structure is like, you know, let's imagine that I'm at a coffee shop. I get milk the first time. And then you're like, okay, well, I don't think the barista heard you well.
Because
that's like a very relatable thing. And then he talks about like getting the cup of ice with milk and then how, you know, it's usually in a plastic cup. And other adults can now see you in this sort of infantile state. And it's like, okay, might as well, you know, add a straw so that you look even more infantile.
Well, there was also that part where he's like, you know, I've already handed out my credit card, so let's just sort of see what he heard type of thing. Like, I feel like that was funny too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, the sudden gamble. You're right. Thanks for adding that. It's like, well,
Right, see what I get.
Just roll the dice. And this has happened twice. And after the second time, you start to, like, ask yourself, yeah, you start to reflect on like, is it me? Am I?
Do I not know how to order? Like, which sort of plays into the whole like infantile thing too. And you know that it's just clever.
Yeah, and then he talks about that, and then like how in this situation, obviously, you know, he spent a lot of time with the first milk order, that in the second one, he kind of rounds out the joke by commenting on,
yeah,
like he's in a new position, one where it's not that much milk. It's, I mean, it's too much milk, but
right,
not
it's coffee with milk. Right.
It's
yeah.
milk with coffee.
Yeah, and like, you know, they're looking at each other like,
Yeah, that's funny. That act out, that tension where they're both kind of like, yeah. What do we do here? that's really good. Cause that, you know, you don't see him do many act
right.
outs, and that was one that was
and
really
just
necessary.
Like putting yourself, like allowing the audience to put themselves in that situation is great too. Like we've all sort of been there. Like a good example is, and I used to work at Subway, right? So like people can mm-hmm. like watch, people are watching you make their sub. And there are some people like me to this day, when I go to Subway, like I want a lot of shit in there. Like I want most of the stuff, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Like so I want it all. Yeah, like other than like, you know, maybe some cilantro, and I probably don't want to pay extra for the avocado. But like, other than that, I want the whole thing. So you know, you go through this process as the one ordering, where you watch the sandwich artists, as they're called, like totally just overstuff your sub, and you're like, they're not going to be able to close that. You know, and then you watch them like fuck it up and like try, like wrap it and. Tomatoes fly out, and you know that there's going to be a tomato like the third roll into the sandwich, like that sort of stuff, you know. And you're just like, wow, yeah, like right. He knows I just saw him totally fuck up that whole cutting and wrapping situation, and he knows that there's sweet onion sauce and chipotle sauce like all over this sandwich wrap. You know, what do you do? Like, what do you do sort of thing? And like that, I don't know. I just feel like those situations are super awkward, and you just take what you can get always.
Well, you know how I saw it in that act out? And I'm sorry to make this a racial thing, but I saw like an older white guy who has just like witnessed, like he kind of maybe backed up his car into another car. And
yeah.
And both people are outside looking at the damage. And they're like,
yeah,
okay, well, that sort of thing. Or like kind of a King of the Hill sort of thing where they all watch Hank fix his car. And they're just kind of watching. They're like, oh, okay, that's I don't know what that is. But he
absolutely
really embodied that in that moment. But yeah, and then it's interesting. I'm going to look at it as an inside joke. And then the last line is an inside joke because it's him and the audience where the
barista is. That's a very interesting point. Yeah.
And like, I don't know how often you hear that. Like, you hear that kind of joke. Obviously, there are jokes where there's like some kind of foresight. Excuse me. There's like some kind of setup where you can anticipate the joke and then you will. When you do hear the joke, that you feel clever for like being able to expect it, and then when you do hear the joke, you laugh because you're like, that's the thing I was thinking. That's where I was in the lead, right? And you feel clever. But for this, I don't think there's any sort of
no. Because do you think it's partially because it's so like only a reaction that Nate Bargatze himself would come up with? Like, you know what I mean? And is that why it's so funny? Like,
oh, that's a good point.
Less milk than usual. Like, I don't know. Like, I think that's part of the humor there. Like, no one's calling it. There's really not a huge amount of work up to that point, other than him really letting you know the situation to the point where you're right. It creates an inside joke between him and the audience. And yeah, I think it's just. No, yeah, I believe that is what Nate Bargatze would have said in that situation.
Yeah, it's an honest, and and then the thing is, like, as a comic, I don't know about you, I'm very willing to make things awkward, like to commit to the bit, not enough to like alienate someone, right, make them feel bad, but I'll say, we'll say similar comments, right? And like, I that's a very comic-y thing to do. So yeah, it's what Nate would do. And it also, I think, gives insight to the audience as to like how we're always on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like if this really happened to him, like we're even without the barista having context, we're still willing to have the thought like, well, you know, without them, yeah, without them being in on it, I don't know.
It's no, like I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. That makes sense to me for sure.
Yeah. Well, that seems like
no. I'm still anyways, like letting that sink in. I feel it. Like sometimes, like, you know, you need to do that. Like, I almost want to comment on that in 30 minutes after I sit on it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, because that's a take, right? Yeah. Like, and I think that's what's great about all comedy is that the audience can have their takes on it, and you know, it's only as funny as the audience thinks it is or how the audience reads into it. So, you know, and you're
let me push back. Dude, have you ever read Poking a Dead Frog?
Should I?
By Mike Sacks?
I probably should. Yeah, I would love
that.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll let you borrow the book if you want. Yeah, of course. And it's a collection of writings, like interviews with comedy writers and comedians. And there's this thing about Norm Macdonald where he doesn't do the joke for other people. Like, it's not always that he does it to get a laugh. Sometimes he says something just to experience what it's like to
interesting
have said the thing.
Yeah.
And I can see that with Borgazzi, but he just happens to be able to form that into
yeah
a joke.
Yeah. Norm Macdonald is such an interesting character who's had such an interesting career, I think. And yeah, I guess I think of like Weekend Update first. But yeah, no, for sure. I think Borgazzi definitely does some of that, but like it's almost like those awkward thoughts that you never want to let out and let people in on your awkward thoughts sort of thing. Like, cause those are things that like, you know, you don't necessarily want people to know, or like you just don't say out loud. And when you say them out loud, there's the surprise factor. And I guess that sort of ties into Norm Macdonald, like saying things just to know what it's like to have said it. Like that's an interesting thing.
I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you definitely could. And it's about fucking milk.
Yeah. okay. So that's it. Do you want anything? Any other words about the?
No, set? I don't have any other words about the set. If I could plug the show one more time. All right. So if you thought this was funny at all, come see Joe and I and six other funny comedians in my backyard. The show is called Rock Bottom. It's going to be February 21st at 6 p.m. at Sundown. And it's going to be a good time. So come on out and laugh.
All right. Well, I'll definitely ask you back on. I really appreciate you sharing your insight.
You too, man. And, your insight's your unbelievable. Good stuff.
And thanks a lot. So what I gotta say,
it's dead.
I think we've killed that frog.